Okay, welcome back to the 2S Horror Quarters podcast, and today returning to the show is Spawn and Vito.
What's up, motherfuckers? Guess who survived the pandemic? These two assholes did!
Hey, man, nice mask, by the way.
Hey, thanks, I appreciate that.
Not in my collection, but it's definitely a fan favorite. Part 6, of course.
You know, I thought we'd do something a little bit more celebrated for the conversation we're going to be having today.
And coming back after a year, you know, the hiatus. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
You know, Smell Manly doing it, you know.
Shout out to the brothers, Phil Magnum,
T-Dog. Maggie, Tits Saggy, Weed in a Baggie, T-Diddy, you know, he gritty, and then Knuckles McKenzie causing a motherfucking frenzy.
You know, speaking about Knuckles, is it me? Does he not look like a hairless cat these days?
So, Spawn reached out to me a couple months ago and wanted to do, what do you call it, an omnibus?
Omnibus, or like the breakdown the entire franchise.
Right, which we
like
did.
Like we did with Friday the 13th.
Okay, and you wanted to do it with Halloween.
Right.
And I was in for that. I'm sure Vito was as well.
Obviously. Well, naturally.
Right. So for me, I had to run through, to be honest with you, I had to run back through 4, 5, and 6, you know, because, and 3, by the way, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Right.
Because growing up, you know, I kind of had a closed mind to those, you know, especially 3, you know, oh, it's, you know, Michael's not in it.
Right.
You know, and then 4, 5, and 6 kind of delved away from the storyline that I knew.
Right.
But a lot now, of us did. You're not alone, my friend. A lot of us did. And we'll get into that.
And it felt good to actually, you know, revisit these now, you know, at my age, 46. So I was like, let me revisit these with an open mind, take notes. And I was surprised at what came out.
Right.
What say you, gentlemen, on the revisits?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I love, I mean, I watch these, you know, I cherry pick the ones that I watch on, you know, when it comes to Halloween season or any time of the year. Some of the ones that I despise, I kind of despise a little bit less. And some of the ones that I love even more by just deep diving, you know, Halloween 3, for example, like, you know, just like you brothers, we'll talk about it later, but I hated it because no Mike, you know, but he was the one, he says, just remove Halloween 3 from the title and just watch it as Season of the Witch. And it's one of my favorite horror flicks of all time. Period.
Vito knows well. Listen to Vito.
Not always. Howard the Duck.
Can't go wrong.
He likes Howard the Duck.
First of all, you leave fucking Howard out of this. That's a great fucking film and a cinematic masterpiece that's highly underappreciated.
Zemeckis, right? Was that Zemeckis did that one? I think Robert
Zemeckis. No, not Zemeckis. It was Gary Klutz? Klutz?
It must not be that great because you don't even know the director.
Lucas was involved. Lucas was involved.
Okay.
But for me, because I'm a huge Halloween fanboy, I watch all these films all the fucking time. I usually start watching the films in August. And sometimes I go either, maybe I'll start with 4 and do the Jamie Lloyd trilogy first, or as I like to call it, Continuity B. Or I'll start with 1 and 2 of the original Continuity, which are Continuity A, the one that Carpenter was involved in. Or, you know, I may start off with what I refer to as Continuity C, which is H2O, Resurrection. Or I may jump into Zombies, which is the zombie universe version of Mike. But I always start getting in the mood for Halloween in August though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, like we did with Friday, let's start off with the first one.
All right.
And shit, who wants to go first?
You. That's your number one, so you go.
Yeah, I mean, as you can see the collection there behind you guys, you know, I am a huge Halloween and Halloween 2, the original fan, right? You know, that's pretty much the groundwork for my love, but you know, before I opened up to these revisiting these sequels. So the first one for me, you know, it's kind of a callback to my childhood as well, watching these, enjoying and being scared of them. And for me, and plus I'm a filmmaker as well, so the making of all these two kind of coincide with my thoughts and feelings towards them and what they went through to make. So the first one to me is always going to be top. Well, top two.
It's always
top
gonna two. Be. It's
no, it is. Two. Yeah, absolutely.
It's all, you know, love. That's right. That's,
you know, the pros for that one are just, you know, everything. You know, less is more, right?
Right.
You know, the score, the simple score, mm-hmm. the simple neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? Everything was kind of condensed to this neighborhood where you're supposed to feel safe at. You know, these homes with babysitters, two story homes. You know, over there in Pasadena, right across from the library. I mean, everything was supposed to be peaceful. Here you have this man that's now lurking.
The kid first,
correct.
You know, to have a little 6-year-old kid, I believe he was 6 at the time, do what he did. I mean, that's the shit
That's the set off. You're right. That's the set off. So that right there was like, damn, this is wild.
That's the travesty of that neighborhood. Little Mikey Myers, right, with the crime that he committed, mm-hmm, back in 1963.
Right.
You know, that was a stain in that neighborhood already.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So the score alone scared me as a child, right, and growing up. And obviously, The Mask. I am a huge Mask critic.
Right.
When it comes to these films.
Does My Mask get a pass from you, Mike?
Your Mask doesn't rank top three or nothing with me, but it's respectable, in my opinion.
I'll take that. I will take that.
It's respectable. Now, you know, we'll get to the movement of that Michael, particularly in conjunction to wearing that mask, and my thoughts on that once we get to six.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, back to the pros of the first one was just the simplicity of it for me, especially when you know the budget of it and how they made it, and they were getting their friends to come help with it.
You know, when you mentioned the budget, doesn't that trip you out that what people may or may not know is that the budget was so low, and it was not shot in the fall time, in the summertime, that they had to rake up all the leaves they used to keep recycling the same leaves over and over again. And if you watch the movie, everything is still green. It's not fall colors.
Right.
Unless you're aware of that, the leaves add to that fall appeal. But if you look at the background, grass is green, full trees. Very bright out. Yet you have these brown leaves constantly blowing.
Yeah.
But that's what's film magic right there. Unless you point that out, you'll never understand that. So when you see the leaves, brown leaves blowing against the green trees, you'll never think about, hey, that's not in the right season. But the fact that they had to sweep up every single leaf and use it throughout, I believe it was a 3-week shoot, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is that right? That's pretty short.
I could be wrong, and don't quote me on it, but that's a lot of work. That's tedious work right there. Like, shoot the scene. Oh, we got to do another take. Rake all that shit up. And I only think they only did a few takes. Like, it was real low budget. They only had with low budget films, you don't get a whole lot of takes. But that's just a lot to say, all right, rake all that shit up. Do it again, or for the next scene.
So, I mean, to me, that's a perfect film. I have no cons on that one, probably because I'm majorly biased on it. So those are my thoughts on it, you know, right off the top.
Right, and that's what I have right now. That's the first line. It says right there, perfection.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no holes. There's no need to suspend disbelief. You know, all the events are reasonably plausible, you know what I'm saying? Him driving. You know, some people shit on that a little bit, you know, but I've seen that. I mean, like, for example, my ex-wife, my stepson, Richard, he's one of those kids, one of those people that just pick up on things without, you know, he taught himself how to drum. He's just really smart like that. Maybe Michael's like that. He saw someone driving and he just picked up the basics just by watching it, where some people, it takes them, you know, many different tries. It's all pretty much plausible, even though they kind of said, well, maybe someone here was teaching them.
Well, at least it was established in the first one. It was established early.
Right.
You know, that you do see it again later on in the sequel. Right. So.
Well, I think it all lays into was very his mystery. We don't know why he does or how he does it. Everything's a mystery.
And that's my best. That's my favorite Mike, is where it's mysterious. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know. I like it where the fact that he came from a good household, that opening scene where you see the mom and the dad dressed up.
Wait, hold on. How do we know it's a good household? The sister is banging out some dude.
It was the 60s.
60s,
free love, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Free love, brother.
63 is before the hippie movement.
Hey, still
dude.
Oops, sorry,
mother. Knock it out real quick. And I'll call you later. And she goes back and she's hanging out naked while her little brother's running around. Put some clothes on. You have a little 6-year-old.
Shout out Sandy Johnson. Shout out Sandy Johnson. Yep. She was at Days of the Dead, by the way.
So that being said, you know, I do believe with Michael Myers, the mystery is I do think he's possessed by something. There's something not of this world that moves him.
Right.
And you can see that opening scene, the blank look in his face. Like he's not in a driver's seat. Or is he in a driver's seat? Or is there something driving him?
Right.
You know?
What's amazing about that movie is that things that I don't catch, I've seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Things I don't catch sometimes, where I forget, but like the buildup to Annie's death, where she's going in and out of the...
That was a long buildup.
That was a long buildup for that first kill. Even though he killed a couple dogs here there, and he killed the driver, you know, and he got the jumpsuit, but the buildup to that, and just, there's a scene there that I was like, is that new? That can't be new. That's had to be there. Where you see his face in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And when she's doing her laundry, and I'm like, oh yeah, that has been. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
because he's studying his victim.
Right.
When you go trick or treating, he's doing the trick part of that to her, studying her, looking at her. You know,
the stalking.
He's stalking her, but he's also fucking around with her too. He's not in a big hurry. He'll do when he wants to do it, but he's enjoying himself as you could tell. He's just checking around. He can murk her out at any time, but he's just there at his own leisure, not going to anybody else's place but his own.
So, and then another thing that I felt was very strong about the original Halloween is the three girls are extremely likable. Yeah, they fuck around, they smoke weed. I'm not judging them. Fuck it. I would love to chill with the three of them. Like, I could see.
Shouts out to Deborah Hill for that. You know why you like them? She wrote the dialogue for the girls.
Right.
Which I thought was really cool.
So, I mean, like, if you look at that, like, that picture right there, like, I would chill with all three of them. You know what I'm saying?
And just
like,
kick
you know,
it. Right.
Just kick it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And or the Buster Balls, you know, the high school shit. Well, you know what I'm saying? And you like those characters.
Sure.
And I think that's extremely important. And you know, even me, like, sometimes I'm like, I can't wait for that character to die. But when you like the characters, you don't want to see them
that's
go.
That's a good point.
Well, that's because they like established character, though. They established character with that.
You know, I want to party with Linda. I want to smoke a joint with Annie. You know what I'm saying? Like, but you know.
That goes into that, though. So not a lot of these films put that type of investment into the character to where they're part of that story. Characterization goes a long way to giving a flavor to a film. Right. You know, the personalities of those three, yes, you do want to hang out with them. They do seem likable. And again, credit due to Deborah Hill again, basing it on something that was realistic to her in that time, in that era, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Because I feel that those characters are more important than douchebag characters. Even though I love when the douchebag character gets it, but I feel that the stakes are higher when you're going to lose someone that you love. But see, that's where the horror comes in.
That's a great point. I didn't think about that. The characters in the first one are likable, and you cannot say the same probably from then on.
Right. No. And then it becomes, you know, some of the Friday the 13th or the traditional horror movies. And that's the thing that pisses me off about a lot of new horror movies is that they make the characters not likable, so there's no attachment. So that's why it makes it disposable. That's why Scream 1 worked so well, because you didn't want, you know,
I know what you're talking about, but
Jamie Kennedy.
Yes. Jamie Kennedy's character died. You didn't want Dewey to die. So you got to make these characters approachable and someone that you could relate to. Mm-hmm. You know
but
what I mean?
Again, too, though, you have to understand a lot of these movies, though, were built assembly style. You know, they're just the writer, you know, again, this is a personal project for John Carpenter, right? Because he's a filmmaker first.
Right.
Everything that came up afterwards was just a byproduct of this.
Right. No, I agree.
So the rule is we just need disposable collateral.
Right. No, I totally agree.
Movie going.
I totally agree.
And unfortunately, that's where I feel your frustration at. That's where you see the lacking of character development because no one's doing that.
Right. And I totally get it. And I totally understand
it.
And I feel the same way. It's like, you know, like in the Friday the 13th remake with what's his name, Trevor or whatever. I couldn't wait for that fool to die. You know what I'm saying?
But as much as he's an asshole, you gotta admit though, you have to kind of like him a little bit because he was so good at being that asshole. Like, he wasn't like an obnoxious asshole that's, you know, 2D, but he felt like a full-fledged person that you would know or work with.
Right, but the thing is I feel that it's the stakes are higher when you don't want that person to die. And that's where the horror comes in. Right. You know what I'm saying? So I think the tragedy of it, yeah. And that's what this movie does better than the rest. You know, or most, yeah. Most.
I would say I disagree with the zombie versions, but that's
we'll get to that. Yeah. But and then like I feel that this one has the monster as the monster. You don't want to turn the monster good yet, and you don't want the monster to be an anti-hero yet. This Halloween keeps Michael Myers a monster the whole time.
Well, it's because that was the whole point of it. There was never supposed to be a franchise. It was just something very spooky. A town's dirty secret came back to haunt it years later, and it was just a spooky thing. These babysitters were attacked by a killer.
Right.
You know, an old wives' tale, you know what I mean? It goes back to the 70s where, you know, the Son of Sam just murking out people randomly. And so, you know, New York was scared for a little bit because he didn't know what was going to hit. Or the Richard Ramirez murders in L.A.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in 84, 85. Where you didn't know who was safe or who wasn't. And again, that's what Halloween played on years prior to that, or even years after, depending on Son of Sam. But the whole point is,
around the same time.
You know, the whole point is this little town was rocked by this psychopath.
Right. And I was telling Vito, you know, this is one of the ones that I wish I would have been old enough to watch in the theater.
Sure.
Like, my mind wiped out.
You know, they have revivals every year, right?
You know, a Men in Black style that I don't know anything about it, that I could just see fresh in the theater.
Oh, that's you. Right, right.
Never seen it before. Straight in the theater at you know, not know shit about it and just be scared. Same thing with like The Exorcist, but definitely this one right here, because they have online, like, there's clips online where there's actual footage of someone watching Halloween 78 and just screaming at the top of the lungs, scared when Michael Myers does the
sit-up. Well, you have to understand too. This was something. This whole format was new too. Nothing. You know, the only thing that was close enough to this would be Psycho, and even then, a few proto slashers.
Black Christmas.
Oh man, don't get me started. Bob Clark, right, man.
Yeah.
But these weren't the norm. You know what I mean? So when Friday came, when Halloween came around,
right.
You know, this added. It was still fresh enough, and this, and I believe this movie grown to. It went from like independent distribution to where they were showing in a few places to where word of mouth, this movie kept growing and growing and sure. growing
right.
too.
Rightfully so. As a matter of fact, my wife saw it in the theater, and she said the part where Michael rose up, everybody screamed like it was a fucking roller coaster. And
well, I
was
no, like, fuck, dude. Well, no woman wants to be aged, especially in public. Sean's gonna be pissed at you.
She's not. Nah, she.
You know, I think there's no cons in that movie, but if you got a gun to my head or something,
right?
Some of the decisions, particularly that part of Laurie Strode towards the end there, were really highly questionable. Like her turning her back to him like that. You know what I mean? When she should have bounced the hell out.
Right. And she should have bounced the hell out. Of course, we all, you know, get out the house. That's always right. the thing. But I think she was so, her adrenaline was so pumped mm-hmm. that when she finally started to come down, she just had to like kind of like take it all in maybe. I don't know.
I just see it as just filmmaking at the time.
Yeah.
That's all it was. Just the story. Filmmaking story elements of filmmaking,
but in like, but if you're putting yourself, he's putting himself in that.
Oh, absolutely, but I don't though, because I look at this as all art. Right. I get
what you're saying.
Because yeah. I'm a writer first,
right?
So I always look at storytelling elements, and as a film buff, I just take it for what it was. It's just an element of storytelling in those times.
Sure.
And I agree with you because realistically sure. speaking, nobody would have done that,
right?
But for the point of a movie, I get it.
Yeah. I try not to be that way, but right. I'm saying if you're asking me, like, what, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Thing, yeah.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this real quick. So with this being said, Halloween 1 is Laurie Strode your favorite all-time final girl?
Oh, out of all the final girls?
Out of all the final girls in any franchise,
well,
is she your number one?
Well, between her and Ripley, can I count Ripley?
See,
yes.
All right.
So Ripley.
That's awesome.
That's Ripley. That's my girl Ripley, now. You know what I mean?
See, I go...
That's sci-fi horror, right?
I go sci-fi.
But here's the thing, though.
But I know it's
Laurie Strode became Ripley, too.
Well, we'll get to that.
So are we talking just horror?
Just in general.
No sci-fi horror? Right. Okay.
See, I don't include Ripley because she's like a hero to me. Look at that poster right there. I don't see Laurie
Strode. Unwilling hero,
the Aliens poster.
Right.
I don't see Laurie Strode rocking that shit.
I do, in Halloween 2018. Spoilers!
You know what? I'm going to say that between Laurie Strode... And Halloween and Halloween 2, between those two. Because right. Laurie Strode and Halloween 2 was, to me, it was illy. I like how right. she handled her
so
business.
So my thing with Laurie Strode being the top, they always say that Laurie Strode's the number one final girl. I go Nancy Thompson from Nightmare on Elm Street because the way she fought back Freddy, and we'll talk about that on a later episode.
Jamie Lee, all day.
But see, that's the thing. It's Jamie Lee. So they think of, you know, you can think of Terror Train. You think of...
Which was dope, by the way.
Right.
Prom Night. I love
Terror Train. Prom Night. Yep. So I think they encompass her as just the final
perhaps,
girl.
Perhaps.
And that's why Laurie Strode always gets the nod.
But here's the thing,
though. Okay,
she
that's
was
fair.
The first, though. She established that. Here's the thing with Halloween. Halloween birthed all this. Halloween was the first in many, many things. The killer in the mask. The final girl. And the victims that happen afterwards.
What about, was this Sweet Alice first with the mask, or?
I don't know. Okay, you brought up a good point, but Sweet Alice was a different movie. It's a proto-slasher.
But yeah, Sweet Alice can't fuck with this. But yeah, no, I'm saying it's a great movie, though.
It's a proto-slasher, right. But I wouldn't compare the two, though. They're not, it's okay. different. You can compare Friday to Halloween. You can compare to Degree Nightmare right. to Halloween. Right. And any of the slasher to Halloween. Sweet Alice is a proto-slasher, and it's very much a 70s film, and it's just different elements. And we can talk about that later, but I wouldn't exactly compare the two, per se. But with Alice, Sweet Alice, again, it was just, like I said, it was just a 70s proto-slasher.
Well, I was just talking about the mask part.
The mask part...
Was it...
No, Alice, Sweet Alice came out, I want to say, 73, 74?
Okay.
Maybe 76, but with Michael, he was the first that was intentionally. The killer always wanted to wear a mask. That was part of his mystery.
Right.
Not to see his face, not to know who he is. And again, the mask, too, was haunting in itself.
Right.
The mask always added to that element of fear, the way he chased you down and what have you.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to my boy Kirk, by the way. And I've said this quote many times when talking about that first mask.
Right.
And that is, I was talking to Kirk about it once, and I said, what is it about it? Is it the guy behind the mask? Is it the man you know, the mask itself.
Right.
And he told me, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. He said, it's like being killed by nothing. And to me, that summed it up. There's right. nothing in the mask, and there's nothing behind
just
the mask.
Just the darkness.
Right.
Right. So that's why that first mask is just...
The first mask is perfect.
The first Halloween to me is a cozy film, if that makes right. any sense.
No, it's it totally does. I can throw it on at any time of the day.
Yeah, man.
I could probably watch it 5 days a week. You know what I'm saying? It's just a perfect movie. Now, one thing we haven't brought up is Donald Pleasance. You know, Dr. Sam Loomis.
Right.
And to me, he is the Van Helsing of the slasher era.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Without a doubt. You not know. Only is he the Van Helsing, but to bring up another point, too, not to get off track on that, what Loomis brought, he brought a kind of like a crime element, police element to the series that every other slasher did not have.
Right.
With the Halloween series, law enforcement was always involved, and no one brings that up.
They don't come at the last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
of the
no,
movie
they're
shit.
Involved too, and he's alluding that. So you always have that cop show element,
right? Especially with the trench coat.
Yeah, kind of just you know spread across in there. Right. You know, Van Helsing, but even with his trench coat, it looks more like a detective.
Yes, yes.
Kojak style.
Yep.
Same bald head.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think that he did for the Halloween movie what Alex Guinness did for Star Wars, where that credibility, you had that credible actor that
agreed.
You know what I'm saying? And that's that. You know that's. Donald Pleasance for sure.
He's shout out Donald Pleasance,
one of the greatest.
Rest in peace.
I feel that he's super underrated in the whole franchise.
I've got my issues. With
I think so. That. I think so.
People always. It's always people. Dude, Donald Pleasance is always recognized.
They always go Laurie Mike.
Well, because I mean you're right because of the connection between the two, but Loomis is the third element to that. So I don't know if he, you know when people say Loomis. I mean, Michael, Laurie Strode, it's just natural because the two are connected. Right. You know what I mean?
I do have my issues with the Loomis character in 4, 5, and 6, though. I'll give you what you're saying for 1 and 2.
Okay.
And then we'll delve into that bit, 4, 5, and 6.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
But you know, another thing, too. Yeah. Another thing that people, I want to add to this conversation is Dean Cundey's.
Dean.
Dude, one of the best cinematographers ever.
Yes.
And this is one of the films he started out on.
Right.
How beautiful and lush this film looked.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Him, you know, again, John Carpenter is an amazing director. Mm-hmm. And when you give him the right cinematographer, nothing but masterpiece art comes out of that. Look how lush everything looked.
Absolutely.
You know, and you can really see his skill on higher definitions platforms. Blu-rays and 4Ks. You just see the colors come out.
Even the way he lit the hospital in 2, which we'll get to.
Absolutely. Yeah. But just the pace, like he took John Carpenter's pacing and just the lighting, the way they shot it. They were both in sync. Like to me, Halloween without Carpenter would still be incomplete without Dean Cundey.
Right.
Because those two
were
just a 1-2 punch.
Right.
When it comes to shooting this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I didn't even think about that for sure.
And you know what's crazy? And you brought up 2, Mike. 2 was even more lusher looking than 1 because you see the skill of Dean Cundey coming up. Because again, they also worked on The Fog,
right?
And so just him getting better and better, like 2 looks beautiful,
right?
And even in my opinion, in terms of the cinematography, outdoes 1.
Yes,
and you brought up a good point about the hospital because lighting's a lot. Lighting adds atmosphere, it adds character, and you as a director know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
These are all elements that go into this.
Right. And another thing I want to talk about with part 1 is that it's still very scary and very menacing. You know what I mean?
Well, it's suspense.
Right.
Here's the thing. You know, another thing when people don't talk about, let's talk about the music. Another first.
Oh, that's the main character of this franchise, besides Michael, is the music.
The music adds is what established what the slasher needs, too. It's like you just can't shoot the scene. So when John Carpenter first screened his movie, none of the executives cared for it. They didn't think it was scary.
Right.
But
right,
he shows that the music is also another character, a signature motif, a signature sound, a signature theme. All goes into that. And the theme is a combination of pending doom and horror all in one. That creates a suspense of it. You know what I mean?
Yep. And then when it picks up, it's like your adrenaline pumping.
And again, too, credit to where credit's due. John Carpenter not only knows how to direct movies and write stories and tell stories, he knows how to create music. He's a music writer as well, too. So when you have someone who's a jack of all trades and does it well, he knew how to score his own film.
Yep.
And when you said that, you brought up a good point how the music starts getting faster, gets heightened at certain points.
Right.
That's because the director's writing his own music and knows exactly when to hit those fucking cues.
Yep. Yes, go 2. My favorite is 2.
Okay, well, since we talked about two, let's jump into two then.
Let's jump into two, brother, because that's my favorite one of the whole franchise. I said this story before when we did the top 10 horror movies with Urge and right? So that one is personal to me because it's the first one that I saw. So, right. You know, so
same maybe here.
That, right. So I remember we were living in the Bronx at the time and we went to visit my my uncle in Connecticut and he lived in Navy housing. And compared to the place that we and my mother lived in Hall Avenue, this place was a fucking mansion, even though looking back, it was probably super small. But so we were staying at the house and mom was watching Halloween 2 and it scared the shit out of us. And I'm thinking to myself, if my mom is scared, what the fuck is going to happen if
this, yeah, you know so what I'm saying? Worst, like, yeah. That's the worst is when your parents lose their shit. Yeah. Like, then you know shit got real.
So I didn't know, I was, this one to this, you know, it scared the shit out of me. And then like being in a hospital already is stressful. So to have Michael just lurking around every corner in the hospital, I felt was very smart. And to this day, it's my favorite setting in
it was the most original setting because it put him in a public place that he was still able to hide.
Right.
And they were smart in the fact that Halloween night, low staff, and then the power goes out, and then he's picking them off one by one.
Right.
And he went at a time to where everything happened late at night. So again, not a whole lot of traffic's going into these hospitals.
Right.
If you've ever been to a hospital ER late at night, it's a much more quieter time, lower staff numbers.
Right.
So I think that was a smart play. And again, one of the most original locations you could put in a horror slasher film.
Right.
Because technically it makes him vulnerable too, because he's in a public area that can be caught at any time. Right. So he had to masterfully maneuver through all that.
Yeah,
so
a place you're supposed to go for healing. You know,
right.
What I mean?
Yes, yes, thank you.
Safety.
Right, safety,
it's,
right.
A safe place. It's no longer
so
safe.
So some of the things that I like about it, the skull pumpkin opening, to me is super iconic.
That was
dope,
but I always wondered how they even did that, because going on what you said, that's never been replicated. And right. That always scared me as a kid, that when the pumpkin opens up, death
right.
is
I always
it.
Wanted to know how they fucking did that.
That skull represents death to me.
Right.
And there's also
there was
that
no CGI
scared.
To pull that off or nothing. You know what I'm saying? That's like 81, 80,
that's Dean Cundey right there. Yeah. Dean Cundey, for him to pull that off with that lighting, shouts out, my man.
Hell yeah.
Right, right.
Good job.
Rick Rosenthal, to me, pulled the Erwin Kirschner, how do you say his name, from Empire Strikes Back?
Well, no.
In my opinion, I absolutely.
Well, here's the thing, though, because Rick has also gone on record to say that Carpenter has jumped in there and filmed several additional scenes.
Well, they said the same thing about fucking Poltergeist and Steve, you know.
But that was actually, I believe it was people. There's been arguments on both sides of Poltergeist, but then to get off the track, though, in this case, Carpenter did acknowledge, he jumped in there and did additional shoots. Because Carpenter himself said he had to beef it up. Because he looked at the film and he realized it wasn't up to snuff to what happened 3 years later in terms of the world of cinema and what movie audiences wanted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rick wanted to go ahead and continue what was visually done in one,
right,
where he wanted more suspense, not a whole lot of gore.
Well, I felt there was a lot of suspense. You know, there was a lot of gore. And people complained that they upped the ante. Siskel and Ebert were like, oh, they, you know, Halloween 2 imitated what they did in Halloween 1.
But here's the thing,
blah,
though.
You know?
It's the same Carpenter thing. Was smart enough to realize the landscape had changed. Now, because in 80, you had Friday the 13th, which went ahead and really upped ante.
Right.
You also had movies like Maniac and what have you coming out.
Yep.
And
fucking
so 81... there's a new plateau set. I give credit where credit due to John Carpenter to realizing and being aware of the movie landscape and doing what he needed to do to make sure his film was up to par with everybody else's. Because I guarantee you, had he not, we wouldn't be having 3, 4, 5, or 6 years later.
Right.
And for proof of this, and I like the TV version of Halloween 2. I've seen it.
I've never seen that. I might have seen it. I just don't remember.
But here's the thing, though. I like it in retrospect after reading about it and finally getting a copy of it. Because from what I've been told, the TV version is as close as we're going to get to Rick's original version of that movie.
Mm.
You know, so I look at it, with in terms of retrospective in mind.
Right.
But had we seen that just, you know, out fresh in 81, the movie would have died.
Well, and I think the scene where he steals a knife from the lady who's cutting the ham and there's blood all over that. That's a nail biter. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh,
you
know, I'm not
so is that. Is that some of the things that he was incorporated? That's what I'm asking.
That we'll never know. They didn't. I know in terms of the kills, Carpenter.
Well,
had
he had no. There wasn't a kill. That was suspense that you're talking about.
No,
so I'm asking if that was one of the.
No. Hear me out though. Hear me out on this. The suspense was there, right?
Mm-hmm. Love how you guys cut each other off too. It's awesome.
But I was gonna say though, in terms of the suspense. Carpenter did admit to reshooting the kill scenes, and he said some additional scenes, but we'll never know in terms of any scenes outside of the kills. What else did he shoot? Now, right. did he shoot the scene where there was blood in the ham, or was it Rick? I don't know.
Okay. But because I think that's a fucking super effective scene. And then that first kill where she's on the phone and looking out the window and it's like, bing, and it shows up. And that's the first time you ever see motherfuckers' eyes. Now, I know
which we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Okay. But that's one. But you know, it's funny you mentioned the eyes. That's the only movie where I did like seeing his eyes, and it was Two. Two is the only one that pulled off the eyes. Outside of Two, I don't want to see his fucking eyes.
I don't want to see his eyes.
Okay.
I agree.
Yes, and I agree there too. Two, and I'm going to say this, man, Zombie pulled it off too.
Yes, thank you.
Now, I'm not vouching for everything Zombie did. Pulled off seeing the eyes.
Which part? Halloween 1 or Halloween 2?
Specifically 2.
Okay.
I mean, 1.
And maybe that was intentional because 2, you saw the eyes.
Yeah.
So, Zombie took a lot and he did a lot to show homage to the original. Right. And I wonder, you brought up a good point, because we didn't really see the eyes in 1, but we saw them in 2. So I wonder if that was done intentionally, was because we did see the eyes in 2 in the original.
Maybe, and it worked. Now, the complete fucking mask coming off in Part 2, Zombie, I got issues with that. But we'll get to that.
Well, so even though I love Halloween 2, it's my favorite one of the franchise, there's a lot of shit that I don't like.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the razor blade, like I was even asking Vito, I don't remember that in the...
It's always been there.
Did they pull that in any version or no?
Are you sure? Okay. Because yes. I don't remember it ever until I got the Blu-ray.
I've owned the VHS, the DVD, the Blu-ray, the 4K when it comes out. It's always been there. The only version that's been missing was the TV version, which understandably so, because again, they had to cut out a lot of the blood.
Right, and because I remember that being a big thing, you know what I'm saying? Because in the 80s at that time... Like that was like around the time when I first started trick-or-treating.
That scene was in the 80s too, though. But it was in the 80s because I remember when I first saw it as a kid, that freaked the fuck out of me.
I think that point, that whole scene with her is just pointless.
Rough, man.
It's pointless. I think they could have just cut that scene out and just have her at the front desk.
I disagree.
I think that would have been fine.
It's good dressing for the salad, and I'll tell you why.
It gets in the way.
It just shows that the hospital is active and there's other things going on in the hospital. That's all.
You don't need to. She could have me at the front desk and you see that it's active. What do you think, bro? Mike,
you know I'm going to ride the fence with both you guys. I'm just going to be like, right. I'm going to squeeze in there just so I don't have to jump on size, but I'm with Vito in a sense that it's another layer.
You can have the same layer, cut that scene out, have her at the front desk.
It could be the other way too.
I still like the fact he comes out, and as a kid, it scared me as a kid because he's drooling blood.
He could drool blood at the front desk.
His tongue was cut the fuck out.
I was talking to my buddy about that just the other night on the phone. I was like, that scene just
hurts. Do you remember that back in the day?
I remember it, but what I don't remember is whether or not. And Vito confirmed, I guess it's always been there.
It's always been there. I don't know,
but I do remember it. Oh, yeah. I remember because it grosses me out.
As a kid, just to see that, because like you said, it grossed you out. Because that was related. That was scary as a kid. That's scary. And he played it realistic. So his drooling blood, he's holding ice.
I'm fine with it, but I just think it's a pointless scene that the parking lot. Now, you could have this, you know, have him at the front desk. I think you get the thing about the hospital still being busy.
I like little details.
That's a stretched out detail that's unnecessary.
It makes the world more alive and believable.
It's unnecessary. That scene, them in the hospital, in the parking lot, I think is just unnecessary. You could do the same thing that you're saying with the front desk. But anyway,
I think Spawn doesn't like foreplay. Oh, some of us like foreplay before we get to the nitty gritty.
Just bust it. Fuck it.
There you go. All right. Proven.
All right. So Ben Tramer, I'd never liked them smashing into him. Burning him, dying, and then like just moving on, like oops, my arm.
I think that was a great callback to one because Ben Tramer, she liked Ben Tramer, and she was supposed to hook up with him, and I think it was tragic he died that night, and she has no idea that he died.
Yeah, but do you think it's weird, or was it by design him rocking the mask and the suit?
Yes, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
So I think in the Michael Myers universe, this mask right here is a common item, much like the Ghostface Killer mask was prior to the Scream movies, because back in 94 and 95, those Ghostface masks were all over every nickel and dime.
Okay.
Spirit stores, Party City, Halloween superstores. So it's very much possible that this mask in the universe of Michael Myers is just a common mask. And you can also refer back to fucking 4, which he goes into a hardware store to get the same fucking mask again. Ben Tramer wearing a similar mask. So
Ben Tramer was Laurie Strode and the rest of the girls' age.
Yeah.
Trick or treating. And you're good with it. He was 17 years old.
He was at a party. He was coming back from a party.
Oh, okay. I thought he was just trick or treating.
Well, even if it was, who gives a fuck?
I stopped trick-or-treating at 13, 14.
That is you.
When did you stop trick-or-treating?
I still go trick-or-treating.
No, no, you're a dad. That's different. When did you stop trick-or-treating?
Doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, exactly, motherfucker.
My whole point is this.
Yeah.
You're going to a Halloween party.
I don't know. I think they maybe shoot him accidentally.
Nah.
You know what I'm saying? That was overkill, bro. Just
bullshit.
Him getting...
He was going to a fucking Halloween school.
No. Him getting blown up and it smashed into a car and having this TJ Hooker explosion TV shit.
That was
shit.
Fucking dope.
No. You don't think that was overkill?
No. I loved it. And the Kenny cinematography, Meet the Flames, looks so awesome.
On this one, see, I rock with Ben Tramer, that whole scene. I'm on your side on this one, V. Sorry, man. All right. But
I just think it's overkill. I think it's overkill. I think a shooting would have been more believable. How many people you know got blown up?
Because if they shot him, they would already know that wasn't Michael Myers. Part of what let Loomis in the dark was that he was burnt, and so he had to wait for dental records.
Tensions were high around this time, so I think that this cat has a mask on. It could be him. People are dying. Yes.
And that's why it would have been more realistic to shoot this motherfucker instead of, accidentally walking and getting hit and then an explosion.
Had they shot him?
That TJ Hooker shit was...
Here's the thing, though. Had they shot him, they would know that that wasn't Myers. The reason why Loomis was so out of the loop was because they were waiting for dinner records to come back because he was
burned
so bad.
I understand that. I got all that. I got all that. I understood it. But I think it was overkill. They could have done something else.
Nah, I disagree.
They could have done something else.
Two things you think are overkill. The Apple.
The Apple.
And
yes,
then Tramer.
And then Ben.
You wouldn't take the train. So if you had to get rid of one of those...
I would get rid of the kid, the parking lot scene. Okay. Just, yeah.
Right.
Leave all that in there.
Little details count.
Okay.
Remember, he doesn't like foreplay.
And then the chicks arguing about the party in town square. You know what I'm saying? Like that whole little thing right before Mike bumps into the guy with the boombox. They could have took
that
out.
Get out.
No,
okay.
They could have took that out. I don't give a new character.
Who gives a fuck about those characters?
Well, they were just girls. Well, they were just girls in that scene, right?
Yeah. No.
But one of them's the nurse. One of them's the nurse. I have to drop you. I have to go out my way.
Oh, go to hand. Okay, gotcha.
I felt that was unnecessary. They could have cut that out.
Great characterization.
But what about him hearing on the radio? Michael hearing on the radio that worship?
Yeah, that was perfect. All that's perfect.
So you're okay with that, but not having the character be introduced coming back from a party, going back to work late.
She could have just showed up late. Oh shit, I'm late. Who cares?
Again, foreplay.
No, that's not foreplay. That's like kissing extra too long. You know what I'm saying? That's too much. That's kissing too long.
Well, check it out then. Speaking of pulling scenes out, the scene of the next door neighbor of the Elrods in the beginning where you see his eyes, that probably could have been pulled out.
I think that's perfect. I think
that
was just right.
So you're okay with that, but not with anything else.
There was tension with Mike because Mike was around. This is pointless shit that Michael
Myers
is not there.
Operating in the public and him blending in because it's Halloween night, which made him more friendly.
Yeah, but none of that stuff had him there.
He was there.
No, he wasn't. When they were arguing, he wasn't there. When the chicks were arguing about having to drive out of the way to go, to drop her off, he was nowhere. And then when he pulled up and bumped into the kid,
he was
that's
in the same
when he was there.
Parking lot because as soon as he got in the car, took off, he walked past him and bumped into the kid with the radio that was on the same facility.
There was time in between that. I just watched it. Just watched it.
Okay.
Foreplay.
Yeah. I think those little things could have got edited out, and it would have been a nice, smoother transition. That's all I'm saying.
Women like foreplay. I'm leaving it at that.
Yeah, that was extra kissing and staying on.
Women like that.
Yeah. All right.
Give a woman what she wants.
Michael Myers.
And some extra
and a razor blade and a razor blade in the mouth.
Yes, it all adds to the atmosphere.
No. To be fair, the razor blade stuff was a cautionary tale when I was a kid.
Right.
Thank you.
And
that's why they included it.
I just think it was over. I think if
it was too
edited out. If you were to edit those out, it'd be just a smoother transition.
Okay,
I just think. Positives, of course, is the deputies. Like he was saying earlier, the whole police aspect.
And you know
the deputies, sweeping the area. I thought that was fucking
hold on,
great.
Real quick. You know what's great about the deputies too? They're the only ones that had realistic costumes. Like to me, the jacket sold them as the real deal.
Right.
Where I felt like, normally the cops in those type of movies are so low budget, they just give them like a generic.
Like outfit. The sleepaway camp cops.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where these, to me, and I know it's just a little detail, but the coats, the jackets, sold it as
they're
real men in uniform.
Shout out Dana Carvey, right? He was in the front yard of the opening scene.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in, I think, a red vest. I could be wrong what he was wearing, but he was just one of the neighbors standing there.
Oh,
when,
okay. That was dope. I didn't know that.
In the opening of
Did
Halloween
he write the song, the Brock Lee song right after that scene?
No. I don't know.
I like the fact there were more kills, the hot nurse, the reveal. I felt to this day is one of the best reveals in horror history. The fact that Laurie's Michael's sister.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that one?
I love it.
Okay.
Because we grew up on that. I'm good with that. And I think the story is fine that Carpenter with the six-pack of beer said, fuck it. they're related.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I love Carpenter, though.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's so honest about, well, how'd you come up with it? Well, he wasn't, he didn't try to make himself to be like this genius. He was like, you know what?
He wasn't trying to George Lucas the shit.
Yeah, no, no. He was like, look, I didn't want to do the sequel, but I didn't want them to fuck up my shit either because they were going to do it with or without him.
Mm-hmm.
So first he said, okay, I'll do the writing. And he said he was up late at night, he had a six pack of beer, and he's like, you know what? Fuck it, they're related. And I liked how he was just like...
I can dig it, man.
I like how he just... The way he was so nonchalant about it was what makes him so awesome. Because his honesty is like, well, how'd you come up with this creative, genius decision? Guess what? I had to do a job. I had to figure out, find an angle over six packs of beer. That's the angle I went with. And that's how we went with. And I think it's just a great, honest view on how projects are made. Just a small... Just how that thing came about
right.
to something so huge and magnificent and significant.
The scene where Jimmy's concussed or whatever, because he, you know, and then he just,
he fought that shit,
and then that whole, the tension of the parking lot, I thought was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Red lighting and things.
Yeah, the whole atmosphere of the hospital, like I was saying earlier.
Let me stop you right there. So you're talking about the atmosphere. Do you think that the soundtrack is better on 2 or 1?
Fuck, dude, that's hard, dude, because I love both of them, dude. It's like saying.
So do I, but I'm just going to put out there, I think 2 score was. Actually did the impossible and
surpassed
1. Not by a whole lot, but I just felt like it came off more sinister.
I got 1 all day with 2 a very close second, but 1 all day.
Yeah, dude. I love both of them, dude. That's a great point. But
no,
I
fuck dope. With 2 They're both dope. Though. They're both,
I think,
yeah.
I think the more electronic synth sound of 2 is what really sells it for me.
They had to do something different, right?
You know,
right.
And again, Alan Hayworth was a great... working partner with John Carpenter in terms of the score, and even though it was based on the Halloween 1, I did like that little remix,
little,
not even a remix, more of an update,
right?
Because
a little bit more seasoning or whatever.
Well, the first one is 70s, and then the second one is 80s.
Well, I would say the 70s. I wouldn't say it's 70s. I would say that shit is timeless. But adding the little 80s little nuances, yes. I agree. I love it.
The update was perfect. Like, he didn't change his formula. He just kind of just added... He's kind of just slightly updated it.
Right.
And it was just perfect.
Right, because 100 years from now, Halloween 1 is going to forever be revered. Hopefully 2 is the same way.
I think so. I mean...
Because I love 2 more than I even did
they're back both, in the day. To me... So. There are 2 different sides of the same coin. Mm. You want to see the full story, watch 1 and 2.
Right.
And I think Dean Cundey, John Carpenter, and Rick, and everybody involved, were all, you know, they did a good job in terms of making sure those movies lined up with each other.
I put it like this. I can't watch Halloween 1 without going straight to 2.
Yep. Give it up.
Because essentially, it is one film.
Yeah, because I love movies that pick up right where they left off. I'm just, that's just something that I like in my storytelling.
Let me get to this, to Dick Warlock, who played the Shape in 2.
Right.
A lot of people said he was very robotic, very stiff.
Yeah.
When I met him at Halloween 40, one of those conventions, I told him this. I loved his movement. To me, his movement, I'm going to have to say, to me, I like it better than Nick Castle's. From the first one.
I can't be mad at that.
Shout out Nick Castle too, but for me...
I like them both equally.
Right.
And then I agree with you. Everything you said is absolutely true. Yes, it was robotic, but it worked because
he was very sore from taking the shots. Maybe he's like, oh, fuck, you motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
No,
you know?
I didn't see that.
I just, to me,
it was robotic. Yes, it was stiff, but yet it was... So it added to the atmosphere of dread.
Right.
There was something about it that just wasn't
like when
human.
He's going down them stairs, yes. I was like, oh shit.
You know what I'm saying?
Like,
it was very non-human and it just made it that much scarier.
My buddy Corey makes fun of his high waters.
I noticed that shit.
And by the way, too, I'm going to point out this stuff as we get into the sequels, but the ending of 1, which was played in the beginning of 2.
Right.
There's some shit there, okay? So at the end of 1, when Michael falls, it's more of a dirt kind of backdrop.
Not an outline.
Second one is like full grass and an outline, right? And if you watch the beginning of the second one, when he gets shot off the balcony, he's clearly on a platform, on a table. Which, again, I know filmmaking's hard. I'm not denigrating anyone. I know there's a lot of shit that goes into it, but I'm saying all I'm doing is reacting to the product that was given.
No, I agree. I've always noticed that. And, you know, I've always noticed it, but I was okay with it. Like, it still looks cool because it doesn't add up, but it still looks cool. But yes, absolutely. Continuity-wise,
Since we're just talking about
Roscoe, he's on a table. And
I go,
right.
I go mind canon like we did, we talked about with the Star Wars with Joe and stuff like that. And I'm good with that. So that's why I give it a pass.
I don't even think it's a mind canon. It just tells you, just, you know, as part of filmmaking, he had, they, I love the fact that they reshot certain elements of the ending of one. Grass is now greener, right? They had, you know, it's just, it was what it was. Right. And it just, to me, because I love the films, it adds to the flavor, but yes, the definite continuity error in that.
Right.
Especially when you know he's on a fucking ping pong table going back up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Deborah Hill said that's the same mask from 1 and 2. I kind of question that. I'm not saying she's lying. I'm just saying I question
it. It doesn't look like it. And I mean, I know you and I have talked about it.
Yeah.
Maybe because it contorted differently to the new actor's
face. That's what they're saying.
Right.
And maybe, and also with age, maybe, but I don't, it doesn't, it did not look like, you know, Captain James T. Kirk, which is what the original mask is based on. William Shatner. He didn't look like it, but
Those two masks, like 1 and 2, to me are my favorite. And two.
Oh, I agree.
So two is freaking scary, man.
Oh yeah, real scary, dude. And another thing,
much more evil. To me, he felt much more evil in two.
Yeah,
that's exactly. And then another part that I loved in part two is when Laurie's trying to scream in the parking lot and she just can't get the strength, or just she's so exhausted for the last, you know, 8 hours or whatever she's gone through. She can't even get a scream out. Michael popping up at the end.
Yes, love that.
Yeah, it's hard, dude, but he breaks the glass.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that was dope.
Then she's like, he's dead. Fucking Loomis is like, get the fuck away from him. He's like, he's fucking dead. And he just gets him. Lifting the fucking
That was ill.
Yeah, with like, the fucking little, just the scalpel, dude.
Just the whole ending.
I love the kills.
But even going, let's go, since we're talking about the ending.
Right.
It was so intense and scary when they're in that surgical room and they're putting on the helium and the gases.
Okay.
That was so masterfully shot.
Well, let me tell you, that's a callback, and I was telling that to Mike. So in the beginning of the movie, she's upset, part one, I left my chemistry book. It seemed like, you know, she was very, and then all of a sudden, she defeats Michael with chemistry, with all the ether
and
all
that. Was that intentional, or you think?
I don't know.
Actually, no, that's a good point. That did that. It was Loomis that started that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was a callback. I always thought that was a callback.
I didn't think it was a callback. It was Loomis trying to utilize what he had in the last effort to at least save her and get her out.
Who's the one that turned it, the ether on?
Loomis started putting all the suns down to get her out, and then she added to that, but it was Loomis that instigated all of that to get her out.
I thought it was Laurie the whole time. I could be wrong.
Two catches a lot of flack for the gore, for kind of maybe copying the first one. One of the particular scenes is when Anna Alicia gets the needle to the eye, which, remember, Michael emerges from the darkness, a la the closet from the first one, with just a little bit of
light.
I love
that. I liked that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, man. Like I said, it's a continuation of the night.
It could be like one full movie.
It is. It's like Iron Man 1 and 2. They're both, it's basically the other half of the same story concluding. Because technically, he was done with it. Michael Myers did die at the end of 2. Spoiler alert.
Had to have. Right. He had to.
It was never designed to be anything outside of that.
Now, question. I want to both of y'all. How, you know, a lot of people hate when Michael makes noises or whatever. I loved it when he got blinded and he's swiping and he's like, making the noise.
I thought that was
I thought that was Laurie. And just,
that was the sound effects. It was
I thought it was him making the noise.
Michael only made noises in Zombies. Correct me if I'm wrong.
So that wasn't Zombie him making two. The noise. Yeah, yes. He does it too. But we'll talk about that too. But anyway, so yeah, I thought that was him making the noise.
No. He's not Bruce Lee. He's not making the.
I thought he was in pain. I didn't know it was the knife.
I could be wrong, but I've always thought it was just. Okay.
To me, it was. I'm with Mike. To me, that was the sound of the knife because he's lashing out wildly like a dog.
I thought that was like in pain with the eyes. I thought that was. That's cool.
The intensity in that one was even more intense than the ending.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he was that close to getting her, you know what I mean? And no one was coming out, and she barely got out alive, and Loomis unfortunately died with him.
Sure.
Right.
Originally,
yes.
At least the original intent was that both Loomis and Michael died.
So had they stopped the franchise right there, it would be your number one. It's already your number one horror franchise, Halloween, correct?
It wouldn't be a franchise. If it's just 1 and 2, then it wouldn't be a franchise. It would just be
Your two favorite horror flicks, 1 and 2 together, would have been?
Hard to say, because you know what? With all these movies and all these franchises, they add to the element. They add to the love. So every time you got a sequel, whether it be Friday or Nightmare, every movie, good, bad, or different, whatever they did right, whatever they did wrong, it added to your love because you got a new episode. It's like a TV show.
Right.
And it changes.
What about you? Had they just stopped it right there?
Had they stopped at 2?
Yeah.
Had they stopped at 2, it wouldn't have the legs that it does now. It would be kind of like a Black Christmas, in my opinion. Kind of like
Great point. It would, because it's like a TV show. The more you watch episodes of your favorite TV show, the more you get involved in it.
Sure.
You know, you made up a good point. Had it just ended at 2, it wouldn't have the legs.
Right.
Right.
And the fact you brought up an excellent example, it would be like Black Christmas.
Which is dope as hell. Right.
Dope movie, but doesn't have legs. It's just a one and done.
And I think my top whatever list changes probably a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Probably a lot. Especially if they, you know, what's next? The next Halloween comes out. When I see that's going to change the layers in my mind.
It sure is. And it should.
You know, so it just just depends.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's just the nostalgia factor why this is my number one. But
it, if it is, it's fine. It's
okay. Oh, yeah. No, I'm
but
okay
is
with
one
that.
Your, is two? Is
two is my number one of the franchise.
So what's your number two?
Is number one? Yeah, of course.
Okay, dope.
Yeah. Dope. Number one is fine.
I take them both equally. I see them I see them as, like I said before, two sides of the same coin. I don't put one above the other because they're both connected.
But gun to head, I'm going 2 over 1.
If you had to pick, to me, like I said, it's tough between 1 and 2.
Right.
2 had so many great elements.
But what's crazy is that the more I watch 1, it I don't know. It just sometimes it's
kind of leaving it a little bit. Yeah. 2 had, just like I said, being in that hospital, in that dark, empty hospital where you go for healing.
Right.
But now you're trapped in there, essentially, with Michael, who got in.
Right.
And the lighting of Dean Cundey that Vito brought up. Yes. To me, too, is it's hard for me to say one is more favorable than 2 for me.
Now, so let me ask you, have you tried, any of you tried to watch Halloween 2018 right after watching Halloween 1 on its own?
I have not.
I've been meaning to, but because the way I had to get ready for, today's show and with my work schedule, I just had to just...
Right. I haven't either.
To me, the part 2 is the one in 81. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get that was it was 81, right?
81. That's, and that's to me, that's continuity A.
Right. See? Yeah.
Halloween 2018.
Continuity D.
Part of the that's family.
Why I get the D. Oh, you kiss my ass.
It's part of the family, but I got my major issues with it. But we'll get to it. So
all right. Absolutely. So now let's hit up 3.
Okay.
And we kind of touched on it earlier. We'll let Vito set off 3.